This is Collins John, and you are listening to Fulham Focus Podcast.
Well, hello, everybody. We have been off for a little while due to reasons, but we're back, and we are in that weird nether regions of middle of an international break. Games either side of us, so we're going to look back, look to the present, and look to the future as the mighty Whites head up to Sheffield on the weekend. So, I've got the American contingent with me. Don and Baldo are in the chair. We're going to be talking all things internationals as we've got Americans holding trophies before they come back to the fabulous Black and Whites. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. This is your Fulham Focus podcast. I'm Boney. Let's get this thing going.
Fulham.
Gentlemen, it's been a while and a pleasure to see you both looking so fine, even though it sounds like you're both half underwater with all the rain.
We are.
We've sent you English rain.
Yeah, thank you. But I want to take issue first off. I'm not the American contingent. Not until I get my green card and my citizenship do I count the American contingent. Not that I have anything against the American contingent. I just say don't put me in that bracket just yet. But yes.
I would tread lightly there, Baldo. You know, your fiance may listen to this and have an issue with you.
I mean, my fiance might have an issue, but my wife certainly. My wife certainly. Since when did I gain a fiance? That'll be news to her when she listens back to this.
Dear listener, Baldo's trying very hard to sort of keep things feeling local. He is wearing a Guildford Flames sweatshirt, which is, yeah, as a Calgary boy, I'm approving of this. But yeah, I'm sorry, mate. You're in the States. You're therefore bucketed into the American contingent.
Fine, but begrudgingly, I'll catch the American contingent. But I mean, since the American, you know, the Fulham American contingent are having such success, I might as well bandwagon off the back of them. Why not?
Yeah, why not? You know, it's success breeds success, doesn't it? So just keep it going. Who knows? Yeah, we continue this lovely winning run that we're on, and you get your citizenship and your green card, and then yeah, you can be sat there wrapped up in the stars and bars.
It will be, yeah. We have sort of had this discussion that should the miracle upon miracle happens that my son decides to be good at football, what country he's going to play for? There is that small part of me just thinks, wouldn't it be great to have the American, just to be able to cheer for the American, or would I make him play for Wales? But we have had that discussion. We haven't come to an answer yet.
I'm going to step in there again, Mr. Baldo. What if it ends up being a girl, man?
Nothing against if it's a girl.
Okay.
If it's a girl, fine. No issue. I mean, especially seeing as
the women's team
is more successful, then go for it.
If it's a girl, better chance of her going and makes the national team of going to the World Cup and actually winning something.
Exactly. They'll have more chance of success.
Or, you know, she goes for Wales and she gets a cap at like 12, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should probably bring this back to
enough international
Fulham
stuff. Can
players,
we talk about, yeah,
okay,
yeah. Yeah, this is Fulham Focus, not America
Focus. This is Fulham Focus.
We can talk about Fulham international players, you know, as you're talking about the men's team over here, the U.S. men's team did really well. We had Antonio play in both games. He did in the first game against Jamaica have a Fulham-on-Fulham player screw-up where he didn't defend properly and let Bobby Reid get the ball around him, chipped over him, and then that got fluffed up another chip, and Jamaica headed it in. So that wasn't a very good game for us to kick off. But after that, Antonio came on hard. He played awesome, bombed up and down the field like you expect. Ream did not play in the first game. Ream did play in the second game, though. And for someone who has not been playing, Tim Ream looks solid, really solid. The passing out of the back, the vision out of the back, everybody says he doesn't have quick pace, but he several times had to recover to stop, you know, a play from developing. If he came back in, I know a lot of people say, nope, he's done, but I'd have no problem with him coming back in right now. He looked really good.
That's good to know. And Anthony Robinson doing the business there at left back as well. Boulder, did you watch any of the international? If I'm honest, I haven't.
Because it's internationals, and the only international news I found interesting this week was Knight getting the Germany contract. But
No, just because of time difference and work schedule, whatever. Like, I managed to get the last 10 minutes of the Wales game. That was about it. And even tonight, I've got priority engagement, so I've got to see if I can find a dodgy radio stream to listen to the Wales game tonight as we record this. So, yeah, international football, as much as I've loved it, now being stateside, it's a little bit more trickier. It's a little bit more trickier to focus on.
Why? You've got the men's national team. You've got Fig Rolls making his debut for my mighty Red Army up north.
I love it.
Yeah. What more do you need? You don't need to tune into Wales.
It's more the fact that, this is nothing respectful, but I don't care about the US national team.
He says that, but when
exactly. Until my son or daughter plays for them, I don't care about them.
He says that, but then when Wales doesn't make the you know World Cup next year, and he's like, oh well, I guess I'm an American.
Oh no, that reverts back to anyone but England. That just reverts back to that.
So hey, on our Canadian player, I thought he did really well for his little cameo, and I am really hoping that maybe he gets is able to step up, So let's say Tate gets mad and, really wants to be a first team starting more and more, and he happens to leave. I think he could easily step in and be that backup understudy,
He just seems really short to me. The players that are around him. He just seems little.
He could be, but I think he's due for a Fabio Carvalho sort of stint. Remember when we first went, when we went down under Scott Parker, and then after the season, after we were relegated, then he just started throwing Fabio Carvalho on to see, okay, we've got this wonder kid in the academy. Let's see what he's made of. And then was his first start? He scored against Southampton. He scored against Southampton, and everyone thought, oh, hang on, we could be onto something here. I think that's what I think that's what his role is going to be. I think once safety is secured, which mathematically it isn't, but realistically it is, but mathematically once secured, I could see him getting a couple of cameos. I could see him maybe, like that last game of the season against Luton, just play him, give him a game, see if he can, see if he can hack it at a Premier League level. I wouldn't be against that. I said after coming, after seeing him in the preseason game, I thought, if we were to loan him out to a League One or a Championship team, I think that would be the best thing for him. And I think that's probably what it's going to be. I think that's probably what it's going to be in the summer, but at least give him a taste of Premier League football between now and the end of the season.
And that's I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's good that even he's being recognised at a national level, even though he only came on injury time, a brief cameo. The fact he's still in a training camp and in a squad with...
Exactly.
And Canada do have some very good player, so he's going to be able to learn from them. So the fact that he was able to make that, I think, serves great for us holding on to him and using him in the future.
And on the height thing, one of our favorite, or one of my favorite right backs, Dennis Adoy, he wasn't like a oh my god jolly green giant or anything like that, and I thought he was a fantastic player for Fulham. So
yeah, and Dennis Adoy plays center back as well, so
exactly.
And we've had some famous. Fabio Cannavaro wasn't exactly the jolly green giant, and he
and if one of the best. Morgs was on here, he'd be defending it even harder. He'd be saying, "Look, little people are good can be good players."
Yeah, so. Morgs stands up for the little guy. He just needs a step ladder to do it.
Yes, 100%. I'm the outlier here. I never really was a fan of Dennis Adoy, so I'm sorry about that, dear listener. I know. There was something I think it was probably the hospital pass that was nearly let Villa in. Was it in the final that? That's me just broke. But yeah, so there we go. And to be fair, my only worry about Luke and Canada is just the terrible toxic atmosphere there is in the Canadian national team at the moment, as they figure out what the hell they're actually doing and if anyone anywhere is ever going to get paid again. But there you go. International football. What are you going to do? Let's run through the rest of them. Who we got? Castagne played for Belgium. Our the lesser spotted Armando Broja came on as a 68-minute sub and couldn't really do much. Alex Iwobi played the full 90 for Nigeria, but Bassey was on the bench. Welshman Luke Harris was up front for Welsh under-21s, apparently. They came from behind to beat Lithuania 2-1. Nice work. And Bobby's doing Bobby-type things for Jamaica at the moment. So this Nations League thing, I don't understand and I don't see the point of, but that's three consecutive ones now for the US men's national team, which apparently is a thing. So congratulations to our American
contingent. On that whole international break thing, I really liked the idea that Luke said in our chat, you know, that it's at the end of the season and it's more in a block, you know, of consistent games that the players can actually develop, you know, as a team rather than in spurts, like you get a game here, a game there, you know. I think that really could be a better plan if the world would ever just stop and think about, you know, oh, this really doesn't matter, you know, and it's not helping during the regular season.
We're just, I've been saying that for a while. It's effectively club football in the autumn, winter, and spring, internationals in the summer. You know, even the, you know, for the 2026 World Cup, for just moving forward, 2025, just have that whole month be qualifiers. You know, just get it all over and done with. Effectively, have the summer with your national, you know, with your national teams. I think
qualifying tournament.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect. That's what I've been saying for a while.
In other international news, we have the sad news that Louis Bonmorte will be leaving us at the end of the season to take up his first proper managerial role with Guinea-Bissau, who I've actually just closed the tab. Haven't they got a player that's named like Turbo something or other, which I think is all the reason to manage that club? This is terrible radio, ladies and gentlemen. It's me, Guinea-Bissau football team. So that's sad news, which I think is going to be interesting for us through that summer period and leading into the next. I'm assuming they've got one of the teams going to step up into that role. I don't think they've announced it yet. But that's going to be a bit of a loss, because I think Bo is one of the sort of go-to voices, isn't he?
He is, but this is something that not being able to watch the games live now that I moved over to the US is a bit different. But I'm genuinely curious, what impact does or did Luis Bonmorte have on the team? It's like, you can make the best comparison I can make is when Stuart Gray came in under Slavisa Jokanovic. He was the defensive-minded coach. And you can see instantly, defensively, we got better. Under Luis Bonmorte, what has Luis Bonmorte, and this isn't me knocking him when I ask this question, but what has Luis Bonmorte brought to the club, and what are we going to miss out on when he leaves? That's
so before, I could be before wrong.
Before I make a judgment on it, I just want to know a little bit more about that.
I could be wrong, but I thought I read or heard somewhere that he is the specialty coach, like corner
set kicks, pieces.
Set pieces,
which have, kind of okay. Stuff. So there's a good example. So if we are losing,
if that's
out on
him,
set pieces,
he's been incredible because our set piece stuff has just improved dramatically. So regardless of what his formal or informal position on the team is, what he actually does or does not work, do with the team, I think just his presence, I think it's a positive thing that we're going to lose, sadly.
I agree with you, like the leadership and the knowledge and passing on. You know, I remember when we had the Slavisa, Claudio Ranieri, Scott Parker season, that, you know, a lot of our players did come better just based on the positions that the previous managers used to play. I think we've had some incredible wingers. Since Luis Bonmorte came in, we've had some incredible wingers have done an incredible job. So whether or not that's something we may be going to lose as well, that will be disappointing. But I saw someone make the point, isn't this maybe set up for someone like Kevin McDonald to come in as assistant manager? Or if he wants to sort of, I know it's not really that much of a thing anymore, but player coach, Tim Ream moving on to a coaching setup, I think that would be a great move. I think if we're going to promote from previous players, you know, club legends, if you would, I think that's a great way to go about it. You know, Kevin McDonald and Tim Ream are the main ones that, you know, spring to mind to take on that role. But if we are, you know, if that's the role we go down, then I'd be happy with it. But we need to make sure that, as you say, if it is set pieces that he was the specialist in, we need to make sure we're getting someone who is, as you know, as good as coaching set pieces as Luis Bonmorte was.
I think White Noise did a, I'm not I think, I know White Noise did a survey on that on Twitter X, and I'm not finding it at the moment. I was hoping I could quickly scroll and pull it up, but he listed Kevin McDonald, Tim Ream, and at least one or two others as possible replacements. You know, who would you choose? And I think Kevin McDonald won by a landslide pretty much. But Tim Ream, you know, I could see that as a player coach, or he just says, that's it. I'm hanging up my boots and I'm going to just become a coach. And I think he's a great role model and he would have a lot of experience to pass on. Everything we've ever heard, you know, he's a very positive, very, you know, force in the locker room that makes things happen, that makes the atmosphere a good atmosphere. So Tim Ream moving into that kind of position for me, no problem.
The one name I do want to throw out, just because I know he's gone into the coaching realm, and if we're sticking with wingers, dark horse, let's get Simon Davis back.
the Welshman is going.
Don and I applaud you for it. If you're going to stick up for every American on here, I'm going to stick up for every Welshman on here. Get Simon Davis back in the fold.
Okay.
Moving back onto more sensible things, Zay Turbo was the player I was thinking of. What a great name. That's not, you know, Junior Jose Correa is his full name, plays in Russia. But yeah, if you're ever going to manage an international team, you want a guy that's up front named Ziturbo. So wonderful, wonderful stuff. I think that's enough for international business. We've got two matches to consider. We're just going to have a quick look back at Spurs, as I think most of the hangovers from that game are going to remind you. I think Morgs is probably still hungover from celebrating he did after that game. So we hope you've recovered, mate. And, you know, best of luck for the future. But I think I didn't give us much for that. The previous away game, I cheekily said we were going to win it 2-1, sneaking an injury time winner, and we got thumped. This time, from the whistle, I thought we were superb and didn't give them a look in. And Spurs, that is, just looked completely off the pace. And it was wonderful to watch, especially as I have many Spurs friends, most of whom still aren't talking to me, which is brilliant. And may that continue for a long time.
I agree. And I said, you know, we got to smell. I thought it was the best performance we've given all season. I know we went up to Man United and beat them and looked very good there. But just even when it's Man United, you always have that sense of something's going to happen to you, and it did in the 89th minute with Maguire. But with Spurs, from after 10 minutes, I never thought we were going to lose. I never thought we were going to lose that game because we were getting so many chances and just dominating them from the outset. It was incredible to see, and just an overall all-round team performance was incredible, you know, from back to front. That's what I said. I thought it was the best performance we've given all season, if I'm being brutal. I know we've had some, you know, great performances. The West Ham game, for instance, brilliant. But just in terms of the opposition we were going up against as well, and what they're fighting for, best performance of the season.
We've had great performances at the Cottage. We've still got to figure out how the hell to convert that into away games, because that's our problem, is, you know, we just aren't consistent in the away games. But as far as the performance goes, the Spurs game was phenomenal. But we didn't dominate the entire game. They did have their spurts, the Spurs, where they took control of things, but at least we didn't fall apart. You know, we kept pressure up. We did very well with when we had the ball and what we did with the ball. So I loved it. It was a fantastic game to watch. And it's one where my Arsenal mate was messaging me right away. Thank you, thank you, thank you for stuffing them. And he was having a great day. I hope it continues into next season. We'll see how this summer plays out. But things are looking really good right now, as a Fulham fan, at least in my eyes. So.
And I think one of the highlights for me for that game was Saša Lukić's performance. I thought he was superb. Again, that sort of player who's been a bit of a square peg in a round hole since he joined last January. But he played really, really well. And if you're going to get your first goal, let it bounce off any part of your body as long as it goes into the back of the net.
Kevin McDonald style.
Yeah. As long as it hits the net, happy days. And hopefully that will spur him on a good a good chunk. The all the talk, though, again, was at our boy Anthony Robinson doing Robinson-style things again. I know Kish and Tom, whose name's gone straight out of my head, have done loads of very fancy graphics. Tom Harris at The Athletic have done lots of fancy graphics about just how important that sort of left side has been again. With Jedi, I am going to call him that because that's what he calls himself, with him doing as well as he is, should we be worried come the summer that he's the name everybody's talking about and maybe Paulinho has missed his chance to go elsewhere?
I think we've been concerned about Anthony Robinson for a while. I mean, even back to the relegation season under Scott Park, I think he was one of the better players and one of the players that you could see, right, he's got a bright future, and we were to an extent like we've been lucky to hold on to him for as long as we can. The fact that he was, you know, linked to one of the Milans, I think it was AC back in the day, shows you that there are clubs around there that do value him very highly. And now that he's doing this consistently on a Premier League level, will just get even more teams looking out for him. You know, not necessarily, but I have seen some, you know, Manchester City. Not necessarily Man City, but there will be some bigger teams that will be looking out for him. And, you know, it's just the situation we're in. Same as, you know, Mitrovic went. If there's a big, well, he wasn't necessarily for a bigger club, but we are a club that if a player does well, they are poached by the other players rather than the other teams, rather than being able to hang on to them for 5-10 years. It's just the way of the game. I mean, he's served his purpose. I mean, I'm not necessarily saying I want this to happen, but if he was to go, he has served his purpose to us. And if we can get 30 million, I don't think that's not necessarily a bad figure, but if we can get 30 million for him, then he would have paid it. Then that's fantastic reinvestment. So again, I don't want it to happen, but if it does, I'm not totally against the idea.
But Baldwin is making a good point. You know, it's, yeah, I hate people saying this to us, but it is true due to the size of the club and everything. It's not just, you know, players that they become really great are going to get poached away, but it's still our academy players because we're just not a big enough club or at a strong enough level position right now to where we can transition those academy players consistently into the first team like a Liverpool can or Man City can, you know, to give them playing time and development. So that is a problem. And Anthony is 26. You know, this would be probably his last big chance if he was going to move to go to somewhere and, you know, be able to play in the Champions League or something big. With that said, what you're referring to, Baldwin, the only reason we got him at Fulham and the only reason he did not make it to AC Milan, he actually went for a tryout and it came up with like a heart thing. And basically what he was doing was he was drinking too much coffee and Red Bull and crap. And it just screwed everything up. They were like, nope, we're not taking the chance on you, blah, blah, blah. Things don't look right. So if he had realized that sooner and cut all that shit out and was on the straight, path, if he was eating and drinking healthy back then, like he probably is now, not so much coffee and everything, he would have been an AC Milan player and we would have never gotten him. So things work in mysterious ways, and thank God it worked out for Fulham. So
as much as I despise Red Bull, thank you for that. Austrian.
I'm not a Red Bull
mega corporation. Yeah. I think looking back at that Spurs game, the noticeable thing was that 4-4-2 out of possession, which could have been tricky in midfield, but just the work rate of every single Fulham player in that game was something to behold. Everybody knew their job, but everybody was like dogs chasing raw meat. It was brutal at times, and especially with me flicking back and forth between the rugby, they were all over Spurs. Baldo, what's your sort of takeaway from what could have been a formation out of possession that just gave Ange a chance to throw his guys forward? I thought it was a good move.
I thought it was a great move, and you know, I don't necessarily think it's going to work every single time. I think we did get I'm not going to say lucky, but the fact that Ange Postecoglou and the style that he played, it sort of did play into our defensive plans on that side. But you know, for a game, it worked. Again, would it necessarily work against a Manchester City? Maybe not. But it was great to see the discipline of it all. That's something you can take forward. Not necessarily the formation and the personnel and everyone's individual roles at any given time, but the discipline in which they maintained it all through. I think that was brilliant to see.
And you know, the thing that I loved was Marco will change things and it doesn't always work. And when he changes things and it doesn't work, everybody gets on Twitter and has a field day of destroying him and, you know, how wrong he got everything. But then he turns around and he does something like this where he just puts, you know, the Spurs team in his back pocket and controls them the entire game, manages the team so well that they, you know, get this incredible result. And then everybody comes out of the woodwork and is cheering him on and saying, oh my God, he's such a tactical genius. Okay, well, you know, he's not always going to get it right, but when he gets it right, it's a beautiful thing. And I mean, he really gets it right on a lot of this stuff. So we really need to support him more and let him try different things. Because if he doesn't try different things, we're not going to know if they're going to happen. So, you know, Harry being a striker one day, who knows? Maybe it's going to happen because we're out of injuries and it's going to work, you know, or Bobby Reed happen to go back to a left back or something like that, or drop in for Luca, you know, because he's injured or something. I don't have a problem right now with Marco making changes and trying things, because more times than not, it's working. And I think the Spurs game shows that. So when he drops back in that 4-4-2 for defense and we change our formation, all for it.
I'm sorry, Don, I've got to pick you up there. Change is bad. All not, change is bad. Always. Things should stay the same.
Not always. Okay, not always. So at any rate, what I'm trying to say is, you know, he's given a chance to different players that a lot of people were like, no. And things are working out very, very well for him. You know, Tete not playing, sorry, but, you know, we got another player that's doing extremely well in that position. And Marco believes in him. Luka coming in and Reed sitting on the bench, harsh on Reed, but no, Luka is doing fantastic right now playing in that position. And him and Polina going back and forth. With the exception of the one time I was mad at Lukic, who he twice tried to stop the player, and that put Polina in a bad position to where he ended up having to pick up another yellow card. I swear to God, he's going to make the 15. Yeah. He's going to fucking make
Ladies and gentlemen, you can now drink. Don has mentioned his 15, yep. 15 yellow cards fair. There we go. I have to admit, a couple things from that there. Castagna, I think, is getting better and better.
He was
stunning again in that role. Kind of feel for Tese. He sort of, it's that classic get hurt and then you can't get back in. We do have to give a shout out to Johnson, whose first name's got him, the Spurs player, and my German legend,
Jimmy Brennan Johnson.
Yeah, and then Timo Werner for. I still don't know how they missed those two scissors, but thank you very much to both of you for doing it, because it made me smile. But there we go. So we went into the international break on quite a high, played well. It was one of those things that you kind of hate an international break even more, because you kind of want to keep that momentum building. But we're coming back and heading into a game that some people will probably consider a free hit, but we were talking about this before we started. Sheffield United up next, heading up to Bramall Lane. Now, there's reports coming around. I think it was J-Mac that put in our group chat that the Sheffield United fans are planning a clap in the 13th minute as a marker of sort of nod of the head to Tim Ream for his support of Chris Basham in that awful leg break back in October, which I think everybody in Southwest London heard when that went. So we wish Chris all the best in his recovery. And I don't know if that's official, but that would be fantastic if it is. But they're not in a good place. Even with the teams around them getting points deductions, it's not looking good. But they're also a team that have proven themselves quite difficult to beat this season at times. So I'm going to throw this open to you, gents. How are we feeling as we head up to Sheffield?
So I'm actually feeling quite confident. I think the international break, it was bad because, it, as you say, it broke down the momentum. And I'm thinking, personally, and I'm personally thinking of Rodrigo Muniz in this situation, after the form he's been in, to then have to break it off and say, right, now you got to rest for, or you get the time off, you lose that momentum. But at the same time, if you're coming off the international break and you want to get that momentum back and you want to start off strong, going to play the worst team in the league and the team that is bottom of the league is the perfect way to do it. So I don't think it's going to be that. I don't think it's going to be that much of a change of situation. As you say, yes, Sheffield United have been very hard to beat, but I just think with the confidence that is going around the club right now, especially with, you know, Anthony Robinson winning the Nations League for the US, and you know, Bobby Reid doing very well, and hopefully, as we record this, the anthems have just finished. Hopefully, Harry Wilson will be in good form coming into the weekend. All of that, I think, is great. You want to start off the international break with a game like this. You don't want to start off away to Manchester City, for instance. If we want to, start off something, maybe make a charge for Europe. I don't necessarily think we're going to, but if you believe that line, feel free. I love your optimism. But to start off the momentum again with a game against Sheffield United, I think is perfect.
I'm not as confident as Baldwin on this one. And here's my logic behind it. We had the break. It kind of just, like you said, it disrupts the momentum, how the players are connecting and everything like that. On the other hand, it does allow people like Pereira, who got a call up, and got a cap for Brazil and everything. He's probably on a high, so maybe hopefully he'll come back and he'll actually stop hitting the woodwork and score a goal. That'd be awesome. But here's my thing about Sheff United. They just had a Bournemouth. They tied 2-2. So, they either get their asses spanked, and like a 4-5-0 type game, or somehow they'll win by like 1-0, or they'll tie things up. So I don't think it's just a easy hit for Fulham. I think, we've got to go there and still take them serious. They've got nothing really to play for other than pride. And, that can sometimes be a big motivator when they just say, screw it. Let's come out and let's just play hard. You don't know what'll happen.
I always worry about teams that are in their sort of position when it's this part of the season and it's just playing for the odd scalp, bit of pride. And I think they've got themselves fired up in a good way. Granted, their last five are what, three losses, a win and a draw. So it's 50 conceded. This is sort of remembering back to that, our triple manager season when it didn't go well for us. But that bottom bit of the table is just a mess. We don't actually really know what the standings are with appeals and things still going on. But they've got some injured players coming back, which is looking good for them. Looks like Archer and Suleiman are going to be fit after the break, which is a boost for them. Whether or not they start will yet to be seen. So I think it's going to be an interesting test. Because for whatever it is, it's a tough away trip up there. Old school ground, noisy lot with not a lot to play for. So a bit of pride against a team that's doing quite well. Yeah, I don't know. But it's just me being pessimistic as I normally am. Just to shout out to Timothy Castagne, who's starting again for Belgium against a team that's all upset about a flag, apparently. So, all the best to him.
Here's my thing real quick, okay? I do think Fulham need to really, really be looking at both Sheff and Forest as important games that, we want to get the points from. Because then we're going to go on a bit of a run. We've got Newcastle, Liverpool, West Ham, all of the City and everything else coming up. So to finish out the season strong and in as high as a position as possible to get as much money into the club as possible, you know, from the level that you win. These are important games. So hopefully we go in hard, fast, get the points and get out.
It, yeah, 100%. These are all important. We were talking about this before. Let's bring it up now. So our run-in to the end of the season is Sheffield United on Saturday, Forest on Tuesday, Newcastle on the 6th of April, then West Ham, Liverpool, Palace, Brentford, Man City, and Luton. And just a note to say that Liverpool game is now on Sunday the 21st at 4:30 p.m., dear listener, in case you're going to that one, which, yeah, will be great for all the Liverpool fans trying to get home. But by my math, and this is me putting my finger in the air and choosing some victories, I think we've got five wins there. I reckon Sheffield United and Forest are winnable games. Palace has to be won because all my family are Palace fans. So this is, you know, that's important, boys. You got to do this. Brentford, because we've got to beat Brentford, and then Luton on the last day of the season, which might be a tough one. But I think, you know, sneaking draws against Newcastle and get anything away at that terrible stadium that West Ham play at will be quite nice. But I don't think Liverpool and Man City will be wins. You never know. But I think that's five wins because that takes us almost to our points tally of last year. Baldo, what's your thing? Because we've got this other debate about finishing eighth and being in the Conference League and all that crap. I don't care about that. What about you?
I don't think it is going to happen. And I'm pretty much of the same mindset as I was of last year, that I think it would still be too early for us. Because I remember it was around about the time I remember having this discussion with Frenchie, Matt Beauclair of the Fulham Focus legend on here. At the day of the Leeds FA Cup game, where we were sort of saying, we could get into Europe, but I wouldn't want to because just the way the state of the squad is, I think it'd be far too early. And again, given the transition that we're sort of going through as well, I just think that'd be too much for us to have to deal with personally. So it'd be great, but not necessarily good for the long run. But yeah, I think, as you say, five wins and maybe a draw would put us at 51 points, which would be 1 point less than we got last year, which, considering how things were in the summer, losing Mitrovic and possibly losing Paulinho, to then say, you know, if we could get to 51 points, 1 point off where we were last year, is fantastic. And given the situation we've had to go through, not really having a proper centre forward until Muniz's current streak has kicked in now, you know, Jimenez wasn't really the answer. Armando Broja was meant to be the answer, but he's not been given the chance. Muniz was terrible, but now isn't. All those things considered, if we can get to 50 points, I think that'd be an incredible achievement. Again, regardless of whether or not that gets us to eighth, I don't think it would. But 50 points, I think, would be an incredible achievement for this team, given everything that has gone on, you know, surrounding it. And as I say, five wins would get us that.
Five wins and two draws. Doesn't that get us to 55 points?
Five wins. Yes. Sorry, I've done my maths wrong. Sorry, I thought I was going off four wins. I was going off four wins and a draw because
we're
confident against the likes of Forest or whatever, but we'll screw up one of them. I was doing the maths wrong.
It'll be Luton on the last day.
Yeah, Luton on the last day to screw up any chances of whatever. But yeah, sorry, but point stands. If we can get all these points to be, you know, in and around where we were last year, would be fantastic.
So again, we've talked about this on previous pods. And I'll reiterate this one more time. At the end of the season, and when we look back on this, you know, in the future on this season, we're going to be looking back at it as a season of possibilities. What could have been, you know, because that is the story. What could have been if we had done so-and-so or brought in other players, you know, that summer instead of just kind of fumbling it around and not doing a whole lot. What if, you know, you could have maybe ended up in, who knows, fifth place, eighth place, sixth place, been in Europe next year. But, you know, it is what it is. So we buckle down and we hopefully move on and we strengthen over this upcoming summer and we do even better next season. That's all we can hope for.
I think that the thing that's come out of this season is I think this is a much tighter squad. They seem a lot more together. They seem to be pulling for each other a lot better. And I think maybe the disappointments of the summer, the departure of Mitro, I think things like that have caused them to have to bond a bit better. And without maybe that massive signing coming in, bunch of guys that need to prove themselves. There was money spent. Let's not forget. You know, Bassi wasn't cheap. Castagna wasn't cheap. So, you know, it's, you know, we look back, we see a big player leave and we don't see that same sort of thing. But I think the signings that came in have done the business. And I think we're going to look back at Calvin Bassi as being a bit of a gem. And shout out to my brother-in-law, who's hardcore Rangers, who was super happy when we signed him, because his exact words, I'm not going to do the accent, but he just said, "You've got a gem." And he's proved that. So that's, yeah. Well done, David. Well done, sir. So we have been chatting for a little while. We've talked about all these potentials. Now, the one thing I have not put on the notes, because I'm going to spring this on both of you, is, will we finish above Chelsea? Now, this is also bragging rights for some friends of mine that are over on the Chelsea Fancast, because I like having bragging rights. We did last year, and it was great. Do we think it's possible again? We're currently 1 point behind them, and they have two games in hand. Do we think we can come top? Because it's likely we're going to be, this is the Southwest London mini league. Do we think we're going to do it again? Predictions, gentlemen.
I would say no. If we were level in terms of games, I would say we have a chance. I think two games, I have no idea who the two games in hand are, who is against or what their fixture on. I just think with that, I just don't see it happening. Again, it would be great, because I never thought, you know, growing up, I never thought we'd ever finish above Chelsea in the league. There, you know, growing up, there was a time where if you finished above Chelsea in the league, you've won the league effectively. To finish above them last year, as no, admittedly, because they were disastrous, to do it two seasons in a row would be sensational for most Fulham fans. I don't think we're going to, but boy, to do it two seasons in a row, and to finish above Hounslow Town as well in the same season, yeah. If we could finish above both of them, that would be brilliant.
I don't know. I think
it's
disagree.
United and Arsenal. Sorry, Don. I think it's United and Arsenal are their games in hand.
Well, I'm going to say they've got a pretty good. That's not an easy run-in for them coming up. They've got some games like us that I think they could win, and so I think we could be right on par. I think it's going to be neck and neck right now where we finish with Chelsea. So there is a chance I think we could finish above them. I mean, they've got still United, they've got Arsenal, they've got Man City, you know, Villa's in there, West Ham's in there. So they've got some teams that, you know, I think, you know, they could have a hard time with it. And we could actually maybe finish above them. I'm not saying by a lot, but I think we're both going to kind of finish at around the same place at the end of the season.
Their run-in is City, Arsenal, Villa, West Ham, Forest. So who knows? But yeah, I don't want to end this podcast by chatting about that lot up the road. But it's just one of those things that is tantalizing. And you know, they have some concerns about their ownership and things like that as well. So it's a weird time for us on their coattails, but also could be fun to do it again.
Well, Lynn, let's finish this pod on some good things like lineups for the next two games. Probably not a lot of changes. Yep. I would think.
No, I think we see this team, providing everyone gets through the next couple
I could
days.
See Reed and Lukic kind of one does one game, the other does the other game, since it's a back-to-back Sunday, Tuesday kind of thing.
I don't know. Does Marco do that? Or will he just make a sub at his usual 70 minutes? Mm-hmm. Baldo, what are you thinking, lineups?
I think Don might be onto something. Yeah, Reed and Lukic sort of swap, have that one game. I wouldn't be surprised to see Tom Kearney even dropped in as well in that defensive, in the two of the four.
Especially like against the Forest game. I can see
that happening, yeah. Yep.
Just Carly, to give Danny, somebody a little break.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, with this, you know, it's not as if we're having to rotate to think big picture of, oh, someone's going to be important for a relegation run-in, but I think it's just important to see what we have in terms of, because I think there is probably that element of Marcus Silva is looking ahead to next season and whether or not, hey, if Yao Palhinha does go off in the summer, as is, you know, still possible, again, I don't want to, but it's still possible, can Lukic take on that role, you know, full time? Can he be that man so we don't have to go out and find another gem in the transfer window to replace Palhinha? So maybe give him a little bit more of a go. I could, you know, there's a whole bunch of options you could take from there. I don't think it's easy to predict, especially coming off the international break where some players would have had a bit of a rest.
The best part is, you know, everybody's supposedly injury free right now, so to have a full squad and, you know, be able to rotate some players or be able to do some subs, you know, like he said, important subs that come on and, you know, take on a tired team at the end. I think that's the best thing that we could have right now going into the end of the season, you know, to have a squad in the position that we're at, you know, as far as injuries and stuff. Anyway.
So, Don, there's one other thing happening in the States, which is this Dallas tournament with the under-18s. You sent me the notes on that. How are they doing? Because our boys are looking pretty good. It's the first. Is this the first year we've been back since a couple years ago? Because there wasn't much news over it last year.
So, it's for those who are listening, it's the Dallas Cup. It's an international youth tournament. It's U19. I think it's U12 through U19 here in the States, obviously in Dallas, Texas. It's got teams from all over the world. We haven't been in it in the last several years, I believe. We took a break or a hiatus from it. Last time we won it, though, was back in 2013. And we won it with the likes of players like Emerson Heineman, Kali Woodrow, Marek Rodak was there, Jack Grimmer. So, you know, there's some names that went on to first team action for Fulham. Have moved on and done some different things. But at any rate, we're in a bracket B of U19 supergroup. We've won both our first games. Today's games got all rained out. It's my understanding they'll be replaying them on Thursday, the 28th, I believe. But yeah, we've got a good chance in this particular bracket. We're playing against a Costa Rican team and a Mexican team and then a U.S. Dallas Academy team. So good luck to them. And hopefully, you know, we'll bring another trophy home for the youth academy.
But yeah, but just to touch on what Boney said there, I'm surprised that there hasn't been a lot more made out of it, because again, this was the tournament that we won back in 2013, and I genuinely remember there being a lot of hype, and I mean maybe not amongst the fan base or whatever, but amongst the club, because that was a very talented sort of 4 year stretch with the youngsters when we had the likes of Ronnie Minkfitz coming through. We won the Premier League. We got to the FA Youth Cup final the year after when we lost to Chelsea, when I think it was Dominic Solanke that scored the late winner. So we had a very good academy side, and it was a good time to be an academy fan back in those days. We had some great teams. So I'm surprised the club haven't made more of a big deal out of this, especially if we can come home with another trophy. And again, hopefully. Yeah, I'm trying to think back how many of those players actually went on to have a lot of success with us. Lasse Vigen Christensen got a stretch in the first team. Not really much. Marek Rodak has probably had the most success. Pat Roberts, I think, was in that group. But I don't know if he was in the Dallas Cup team, but he was in and around the team at the time. So it is a chance for a lot of youngsters to get their chance and to be, you know, to prove themselves to the player, to the first team. So I'm stunned that the club haven't made a bigger deal like this, but if we can go on and win it, then that would be fantastic.
Well, you know, this is where we know the club listens to every pod we produce. And so they'll take the hint now and they'll start pushing this more and getting it out there on their social media accounts. But at any rate, good luck to them. I'm glad to hear they're back here doing their thing and they're doing well. So what an excellent thing for the academy, I think.
Well, one for Sam, who's running the next pod. We'll have to inform everyone how they've gotten on, just in case the club forgets to let us know. Gentlemen, this has been fun. It's been good to get back together. Sorry, dear listener, for being off last week after such a good victory. But we're back. We've got the plan for the next little while. Baldo's got to go dash off. Don has Don things to do, and I have to actually go spend some time with my family. So, dear listener, thank you for spending the last 50 minutes and 24 seconds with us. We do appreciate you joining us. on behalf of everyone here at Fulham Focus, take care of yourselves, reach out to your friends, make sure everybody's okay. And yeah, until next time, take care, be safe. Come on, you Whites.
Fulham.